We tend to think of epochs as giant things that change on somebody else's watch millions of years in the past or the future. But some geologists are saying we've entered a new epoch, leaving the stable Holocene epoch to enter the Anthropocene, marked by human impact on the planet. But what would that change mean to the planet and how we think about it? Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn, and I'm glad to be with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're joined this hour by Earl C. Ellis. He's an associate professor of geography and environmental systems at the University of Maryland in Baltimore County, and he joins us today from China by phone from the Anhui province. And what do you think? Will a new geologic epoch give us permission to fix environmental problems with technology? And do you believe we're in a new geologic epoch? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And Earl Ellis, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
What time is it in China?
It is now 10 o'clock at night.
10 o'clock at night. That's how big the world is, huh? Are you researching our subject today while you're over there?
Yeah, in a certain form I am. And it's actually kind of an ideal place to discuss the Anthropocene. It's really the place where my connection to the concept started, with my interest in the ecology of landscapes that have been used to sustain human populations for thousands of years, kind of the classic sustainable ancient traditional agriculture. That was my original interest in China.
Hmm.
So, yes, I do believe that you know, this is the kind of place that gives an example of, you know, how humans can live on the planet, you know, for the long term.
Well, let's talk about terminology first. When we talk about a geologic epoch, what does that mean?
Geological epoch is a period of the geological chronology that is basically not quite the smallest unit of time that is recognized. The smallest is usually the era, but then, you know, you have larger units above that. And the actual amount of time within a particular epoch tends to be in the millions of years, but they vary a great deal. And our current, or at least our prior epoch, is only approximately 10,000 years, the Holocene epoch. So they vary in time. And essentially the smallest really major units of geologic time.
So what was the Holocene one? What was that epoch marked by?
The Holocene is actually an interesting geological epoch, and I've actually learned most of what I know about the geological chronology pretty recently. I'm an ecologist by training for the most part, and so my knowledge is not so deep. But when we think about units of geological time, can you repeat the question? It's a little bit late here.
Sure. I was just wondering, I guess what I'm getting at really is, so geologists are saying that we've entered a new geologic epoch, that we're no longer in the Holocene, which has lasted, you've said, for about 10,000 years. So what is the difference between the one we've left and the one now? What's the evidence that we're going into a new one?
Okay. And the Holocene epoch is the most recent epoch in the official geological chronology. And it begins basically with the last glacial period and as basically goes up until the current time. And it's characterized as the unit of time in which all the surface processes that we're familiar with, the soils that we see, and this sort of thing, are all created during this epoch. So that's where that Holocene comes from. And in the Anthropocene, there's really a long list of different kinds of evidence you could present that show that humans have transformed that surface material, the standard geological materials like sediments and soils, profoundly in such a way that as to leave a permanent record in rock. But we also have changed a lot of basic Earth system processes, such as the climate system, the concentrations of gases in the atmosphere. And for my interest as an ecologist, we changed very many basic aspects of biology at the global scale. And again, a long list of things with this, ranging from, you know, domesticated species that cover, you know, huge areas of the Earth's surface to the extreme amount of mixing of new species in with the old species that were here. A lot of people call these species invasions. These are just a large, you know, set of major alterations by humans in the Earth system.
And they're deserving, geologists think, of inclusion in the new epoch then, because that's the trademark of the age we're in now, these sort of age of man's impact on the Earth.
Yes, that's right. These would be the symptoms, in a sense, of this new geological epoch. And yeah, there are many. We actually met in London a few weeks ago to discuss some of the ways we might characterize that transition from the Holocene, which is, you know, basically the period before the current, and how we do the transition into the current time. Like, what are the best indicators of that? And a lot of these are pretty technical and geological criteria, because when geologists look at an indicator of a transition between one geological period and another, they are looking for evidence that will remain in rocks in an unambiguous form as much of the world as possible for at least 100 million years. So you can imagine, even knowing what presently is being done to the surface of rocks will remain for 100 million years is quite challenging. So the geologists have quite a challenge to determine, you know, what would be the best indicators in rock of this age of humanity, how we've, you know, the age we've created.
Why does it matter to change the name like this? What changes in the way we think about the Earth if we decide that this is the Anthropocene epoch?
There's a lot of ways to look at it. And there's one thing I found interesting about talking about this with different scientists and the public is that it's almost like holding up a mirror. The people who think that when humans modify things, they're destroyed, they see this as just the end of the world. People who are more positive about the future see this as a great opportunity to take ownership over what we're doing with this planet, rather than just letting it play out as it is without really anyone taking any responsibility for it. So there's a lot of different ways to take this. From my point of view, we have reached that point, and this is a very important thing because of the way that the Anthropocene is forming, that we're reaching the point where humanity is starting to wake up to the fact that we must take responsibility, we must take ownership over what we're doing, rather than think of it as something external to us. We often tend to think of the planet as something that must be saved, when it's really already too late for that. We've already changed the planet so much that it's really our planet. And it's time for us to get used to the idea that whatever the future of the planet's going to be, it's going to be up to us. Good or bad, it's up to us. So I think that taking ownership and responsibility for the biosphere and the atmosphere and the climate system that we've, you know, directly connect with that individually and as a whole humanity is what will hopefully start to become a new force in the way we interact with the planet. And we've had some, you know, successes and failures in acting as a global force. You know, we've eliminated core fluorocarbons, which were destroying the ozone layer. We did that successfully, and that was a kind of coherent action that was for the good of everyone. But we failed to deal with climate very successfully so far. So either way, I think it puts the responsibility firmly in our place. You can't really shirk that responsibility anymore in the Anthropocene.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at the, you know, the years of scientific discovery, usually humans have sort of discovered their way out of a leading role. I mean, for instance, the Earth is not the center of the universe. You know, Darwin reduced us to just another animal that's evolving on a particular branch. I mean, humans aren't used to thinking of themselves as the center of things in terms of biology and planetary destiny. But you're saying maybe this is, by renaming this epoch, it's giving us responsibility. It's putting it back on our shoulders.
I hope that'll be one result of actually going down this route and recognizing formally the entering of a new geological age in which we are the dominant force in the Earth system. So I see that as a positive thing. In some ways, you're right. It, as a scientific revolution, which in some ways it is, it's contrary to a lot of the previous ones, where recognizing the kind of the forces outside of us as being primary, you know, that the world was really beyond us, has been really important in, you know, enabling good objective work. But the remarkable thing is, and as an ecologist, I see this very acutely, the idea that we can look at biology without considering the human role in evolution and the actual ecosystem structure that we see all over the Earth is so amazingly misguided. The idea that you can do that, because we're such a profound and pervasive and extensive influence that, you know, really, I don't think you're doing good science if you think that you can keep people out of ecology. And I think that the climate scientists have been on that boat for quite some time now. They've recognized that just treating the Earth as a natural geophysical or biogeophysical process is inadequate to understand just basic scientific properties of the way our planet works.
There are theories. I mean, there's the Gaia theory, that the Earth knows how to regulate itself and that it's just a system of interconnecting systems. And, you know, maybe there's not as much place for humans in that. The Earth is bigger than all of us, bigger than humans, bigger than all the species, and that we maybe should take a hands-off approach because this is something that is beyond us. Is that still a prevalent idea today?
You know, I don't think that's such a... I mean, I think there's certainly some people who might believe such a thing, but I think among the scientific community, there's more or less, at least in my experience, two major camps, and really the dominant camp is not the one that is saying the most important thing is basically hands-on and into the future, and it's a human future. It's not the future we had before. You know, we're not in the Holocene anymore. We're not able to have a planet without 12% of the land cultivated for crops and with a carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere that's higher than ever before in the past geological epoch. I think most scientists are more or less thinking about how can we get back to these safe levels of the Holocene, you know, before we were really that influential. But a small group, and it's growing larger very quickly, is recognizing that that's really not an option. And when you consider the needs of 9 or 10 billion people and more, that we're going to have a planet that's profoundly altered by us. And the question is really, how altered do we want it to be and in what way, more than can we go back to the patterns of an unaltered planet that resembles those before us? I think so. There's divergence on that.
Well, and just looking at the responses to the article in The Economist called A Man-Made World about the Anthropocene Epoch, there were a variety of takes people had, and one was that by declaring this is the Anthropocene era and basically giving humans carte blanche to get in there, roll up their sleeves, and start being active participants in the biological, the geological direction of Earth right now, that this would put this basically in the hands of Western scientists. Is that a concern?
Not for me. I mean, we only wish that we had such ability to influence the way that people act. And I'm one of those scientists who would say that I don't feel that I should have huge influence on the way people act. I guess I think there's probably the majority of scientists are like that. We see ourselves as informing, you know, the public and policymakers and our students and you know, basically whoever's interested in what we know about what we've observed about the planet, how we understand it. And I think that's really our most important role as informers, not as decision makers. So I don't really see us as taking any kind of control out of anyone else's realm when we say that, you know, we're in this situation. It's just an observation that if you want to predict the future of any aspect of your system and you don't take into account how much humans have and will change this system, you're not going to understand it scientifically or in any other way. You're not going to be able to manage either.
But if you are managing it, who's making those managerial decisions, I guess, is the question. Is it the scientists who are, you know, creating the Anthropocene era, or is it, who is it? Who's making the managerial decisions?
Well, scientists, the most that scientists are going to be able to do with this idea of the Anthropocene is to basically just make a decision about whether the degree to which humans have altered Earth's systems is great enough and permanent enough in the geological record that it will produce good science to recognize that distinction in the Earth system. So that's all that scientists are really going to do with this concept of the Anthropocene. However, as thinking individuals, as intellectuals, and as members of the public, we have our opinions about what it means. And people that we found, you know, are very interested in this idea. It's got remarkable public awareness, I think, you know, in terms of how fast it's gone from being just a kind of a technical word brought up at some scientific conferences to something that's really interesting. You know, the media has shown a lot of interest in this, and people love to discuss it, is that it will stimulate thinking about our role on this planet. That's a useful thing. But I don't think that it means that we have any more role in deciding anything than we did before we would have recognized such an epoch.
But isn't that part of what this is doing? It's letting us get involved in the carbon emission the nitrogen cycle, in how we want to deal with all of those things from a technological point of view.
Well, the fact is that we've already done that. We have already changed. I mean, recognizing that we're in the Anthropocene is not saying we need to start getting involved. It means it's saying that we've already been involved so much that we no longer have a planet in which we can't be involved. I think that's what the message is. So we're not trying to say that, you know, we need to manage the carbon cycle more. I think we need to manage the carbon cycle for our own betterment rather than without any concern about the future. But we already are managing the carbon cycle, like it or not, although we're only managing one part at a time. And that mismatch between, you know, one person putting the carbon up and another person taking it out or whatever, that mismatch, that imbalance is threatening to all of us. We have to get things in balance if we want to have a planet that we're going to find desirable in the future.
Our guest this hour is Earl Ellis. He's an associate professor of geography and environmental systems at the University of Maryland in Baltimore County, and he joins us today from China in the Anhui province. And we want to know what you think. Will a new geologic epoch, the Anthropocene, change things? Does it change or will it change the way that you think about the planet and the systems that are involved here? And do you believe that we are in a new geologic epoch? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 1 o'clock, hope you'll stay tuned for Talk of the Nation as Ken Rudin joins host Neil Conan for another edition of The Political Junkie. That's 1 o'clock's Talk of the Nation. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about whether the Earth has entered a new geologic epoch. Some geologists are calling it the Anthropocene epoch, which is marked by human intervention in Earth systems. And the other topic is what that will change in the way that we think about the planet and maybe how we manage the planet's health. Our call-in number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, as we talk with Earl Ellis, an associate professor in geography and environmental systems from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And we'll take our first phone call now. Andy joins us from Lake Geneva. Hi, Andy. Andy, are you with us? Looks like his cell phone is cutting out, so I'm going to go to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I'd like to make a couple of comments and then maybe perhaps get a follow-up. My reaction to this Anthropocene epoch, it's more of a political and economic construct than a scientific one. And, for example, the ozone hole over the Antarctic is causing a collapse of phytoplankton production in the South Oceans, which is the basic bottom of the food chain for the entire planet, essentially. There's huge dead spots in the oceans. Like there's one in the middle of the Pacific that's almost the size of the continental United States. This can't be good. I mean, in the past, whenever this has happened, when you have apex
Oh, I'm sorry. We were trying to unlock another caller and we lost Bill. So, Bill, please call back and we'll take your call again. But maybe you heard enough, Earl, about Bill's comment about the dead zones in the ocean. Do you have a response based on what you heard?
I think that Bill was voicing concerns about the unsustainable aspects to things we've done. Like it's true, we've managed to create ozone holes, and they're still there. We haven't actually solved the problem completely. It takes a long time for the Earth system to respond. Even when we do things better, we still don't get a new or fresh Earth system where everything's been untouched. So, yeah, the fact is that the planet has been degraded in many ways that are undesirable for us. So I think that's a good lesson that I hope we are learning and getting better about managing. And obviously we ignore these things at our own peril. But yeah, that would be my response to that idea. The other thing he said that I thought was relevant was about the idea that the Anthropocene is a socio-political construct. I think that was what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And there, to a certain extent, that's correct. Because actually at the present time, the Anthropocene is under consideration by the Anthropocene Working Group of the International Commission on Stratigraphy. They're the group that would actually recognize a new epoch.
Mm-hmm.
And at the current level, it's merely consideration. We are not at the point where we can designate the epoch. And that is not unusual. It takes approximately, well, it depends on the epoch, but the Holocene epoch took approximately 20 years to achieve formal recognition through the formal international scientific process.
That's a while.
It's quite a while. So are we in the Anthropocene? I think at this stage, until the geologists have worked this out, and I fully expect it to take close to a decade before they're ready to pronounce on where we will find the permanent record in rocks and what that indicator will be of this epoch created by humans. And they could even consider it too early to tell. And I think that would be a reasonable thing to assess. It's quite possible that our effect on the planet will be more like that of a giant meteorite and therefore be a geological event of short duration rather than an actual extended period like an epoch. So the jury is out from the scientific point of view about whether this is absolutely true. Although from the other, as a geological epoch, from the point of view of ecologists or climate scientists, though, most of us, or at least a large number of us, are convinced that humans have profoundly influenced and altered almost all of those systems. So we see a very huge human effect, but whether it's going to be recognized as a new epoch is a matter for the geologists that will take some time to resolve. So right now, what you're hearing out there in the blogosphere and in the media is more or less people's interpretation of the idea. It's not actually firmly established as a geological formula at this point.
And the scientist who coined the term, he sort of said it off the top of his head at a meeting one day, and everyone just kind of thought, yeah, he's right.
That's right. Paul Crutzen basically responded and kind of almost reacted, I think, to somebody talking about atmospheric chemistry. That's what he is. He's an expert. He's one of the people who actually discovered the chemistry of ozone-depleting chemicals. Right, so he's very aware of how humans can modify things for the better too, and actually improve things that after we know we've made a mistake with something like chlorofluorocarbons. But yeah, it was a very spontaneous reaction, and basically people picked up on it. And it wasn't really until a few years later that actually geologists, and in particular Jan Zalazuwicz, who convened the Anthropocene Working Group, the geologists actually started to work and look at it seriously. Before that time, it was really more just a good idea. It was just an idea floating out there that people grabbed onto right away, me, myself included, because it just seems to fit so well to what we see.
And Bill is back with us. Let's see if he has more to add to his comment. Hi, Bill. Sorry we cut you off.
Yeah, I sort of I think he's going a bit afield from what I meant when I said that it was more of a political and economic construct than a scientific one. It seems to me that it's pretty plain that what we're doing is destructive, in the sense that whenever there's been a situation where you have apex predators dominating so thoroughly, there's always been an ecological collapse. And he is essentially, by creating this Anthropocene concept where we can, supposedly take responsibility for the changes that are happening in the Earth and just acknowledge that we're having a big impact, it's essentially giving governments and multinational corporations permission, just letting them off the hook, saying, okay, we can pollute, we can do this, we can do that, we're changing the Earth. The point is, and now they get to battle over who gets to make the decisions over how they're changing the Earth.
Hmm.
And, as far as I'm concerned, the solution to all of our problems is about 5 billion less people. I mean, you can't have a system, an ecological system, stand where you have 9 billion or more, he mentioned 10 billion, apex-level predators, because the food chain is, from the bottom up, is being destroyed, and eventually the whole thing is going to collapse. I mean, it just sounds to me like he's letting everybody off the hook.
All right, thanks, Bill. What do you say, Earl?
All right, that's a great, challenging way to look at it. And I think it maybe is not the mainstream view of many concerned with conservation and kind of preserving wild nature and this sort of thing. But it echoes that view that somehow we would be safe in a planet that was not transformed, that we could actually have a planet with this many people that isn't completely re-engineered as we have. And I think one thing to consider, and this has been said many times, is that, we're near this kind of collapse. And there have been collapses of civilizations in the past. And some of them appear to have been linked to changes in climate that reduce the ability of these civilizations to produce food for themselves, and that caused their collapse. But I think the big picture says a very simple thing. Don't count out Homo sapiens. We are an amazingly adaptive and versatile species. We're not a top-level predator. In fact, we are more of kind of a middle-level player. We interfere with almost every aspect of the Earth system to get what we want. And it's not just at the top of the food chain. It's at every level of the food chain. And we've really already lived in a planet that's been transformed profoundly by humans for thousands of years. We've been living like this for a long time. The idea that we just suddenly started destroying this planet and that's what we do is, I think, really not looking at the big picture of how long we've sustained this massive growth. But I would agree with the idea that we are currently in uncharted territory. We do not know how long we can do what we're doing or whether we can continue, because the Earth has never seen this before, and neither has our species. We've never encountered this situation. It's unique in Earth history. But like I said, my opinion is do not count out Homo sapiens. The question for me more is whether or not we're going to be proud of the planet that we create as a result of trying to sustain so many people on it. Are we going to be able to look back 1,000 years from now and say, this is the planet we always wanted, or are we going to just say, I can't believe we did this? And we ended up here. Like, do we really want to live on a planet with no wild fish? We're going there right now. When was the last time you ate wild food, besides fish? It's really, we've all become agricultural. We keep changing with the systems that we need to sustain ourselves. And I think we're so adaptable, we probably will continue to do so. But in the process, we change everything around us. And so I don't really believe that we're headed toward collapse, but I do think that if we don't plan and think more collectively in ways, and really I think the comment about, are we going to just let the corporations run roughshod over us, I think it's a good point. I mean, are we just going to let certain interests do things that we are against us as individuals? I think it requires better environmental governance.
And how we're going to achieve that is really a tremendous challenge. And I don't really have so much insight as a natural scientist into how best to move forward in making our governance of this planet better than it is, because clearly we can do a lot better, and we probably will need to if we want to see a planet 100 years from now or 500 years from now that is something we can be proud of.
Is there a point of view embedded in the theory of an Anthropocene epoch? I mean, about humans, whether humans are harmful or helpful to the planet, or is it neutral?
Well, like I said, I feel like it's almost like holding up a mirror. I mean, you've got Bill's point of view, which, you know, when he hears the Anthropocene epoch, he thinks of humans as destructive. And so he thinks that the future of humans will be destruction and catastrophe. And if you're more of an optimist, you might see the potential that we have as an unprecedented thing in the Earth system. We have a group of individuals that are capable of social learning, right? We can all learn together and extend things and move things around. We're all better connected than we've ever been before. You know, all of us can communicate much better than ever before. We have amazing powers that really are unprecedented on this planet, and think of all the good things that we could do with this. It's really a remarkable time, especially when we're conscious of this, because we haven't really thought about our role in this kind of proactive way of engaging with the planet. It's always been kind of just looking out at nature and thinking of it just being out there. And now it's really all kind of within our yards. It's all right close to us. It's all stuff we've created, pretty much. So I think that there's a lot of optimism to be had there, and that's another point of view. And then there's some people who just, you know, it doesn't mean a whole lot either way. It's not, you know, who cares if we're in the Anthropocene epoch? So I think, hold up a mirror and you'll get different points of view about this.
Let's take another phone call now. Mark is with us from Williams Bay. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I have a question and a comment and a question. My comment is that I'm worried about a misunderstanding, because the guest often talks about scientists and politicians and then says we. I'm concerned that there's a misunderstanding, that the listeners may think that we means the scientists and the politician, whereas when the guest says we, often or almost always he means the public and humanity as a whole. I mean, we are changing the system. We, humanity, is, by our choices of what energies to use, what foods to grow, we are changing the system. And I think people estimate the amount of change that scientists can really do. It's not that nobody would listen to scientists if scientists would just go out and tell, okay, everybody stop using electricity from coal power plants, right? And my question is, we were talking before about collapse of civilizations due to climate changes. I think I want to ask, has there been previously climate changes that collapse civilizations that were triggered by these civilizations? Or is this the first time that a civilization creates a climate change that may collapse it?
Great points. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that clarification, because that is indeed the way I was using the term we, kind of the royal we as humanity, not just as scientists. Especially and exactly for the reason that we don't have that real kind of power. We're a really pretty minor player in many ways, in the way decisions get made at the larger scales, hopefully bigger in the future. But this idea of what was the last point again?
He was wondering whether there were other instances of civilizations collapsing due to human intervention, or whether we would be the first ones.
Yes, that's an excellent question. I think generally you'd have to say yes. This is unique in history of the planet. On the other hand, there are some, and this is not, I think, the most firm scientific observations, that there is evidence of some regional climate changes induced by civilizations, such as, you know, clearing areas and reducing rain, and, you know, causing, therefore, you know, lowered water availability and drought and this sort of thing.
In recent history?
Not so recent. Perhaps you might say there was some interaction of that type with the Dust Bowl, but obviously that's not a civilization. It's just a group of people that influence themselves more or less or region that was influencing itself with climate. There's evidence of early alteration of climate by early clearing of land thousands of years ago, but it's no evidence I know of that that actually fed back and reduced the productivity of land or something like that for those farmers. The reverse is also somewhat controversial, but has there is some evidence that, for example, the Black Plague in Europe, which killed off so many people, led to a massive recovery of forests in Europe and subsequently reduced carbon dioxide concentrations and therefore actually caused some cooling in Europe 200 years ago. So there's some evidence of those kinds of things. But this is a pretty unique time period. I don't think we're necessarily leading to a collapse just because we changed the climate dramatically. It's very possible that we will adapt to this by moving our agricultural around. The amount of hardship and cost associated with that will probably be pretty massive, but I have a hard time believing it'll wipe out and cause the collapse of kind of the larger scale system. Because right now we do live in a planet where food moves everywhere. It's really no one place that could starve any other place.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Mark. We appreciate that. And we'll take our second break now as we talk with Earl Ellis, Associate Professor of Geography and Environmental Systems at the University of Maryland in Baltimore County. And we're wondering what you think. What would entering a new sort of man-made geologic era epoch mean? Will it change the way that we think about the planet and how we interact with it? Do you think it's significant, or do you think the Earth will continue as it has, and humans maybe aren't as significant as we think? Our number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 40 years later, Henry Kissinger says opening the door with China was the easy part. The two countries disagree on everything from human rights to trade to military power. After two on Talk of the Nation, Henry Kissinger and Ted Koppel join host Neil Conan for a conversation about China. That's 2 o'clock's Talk of the Nation. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about an idea under consideration now among geologists about whether we are entering, as a planet, a new epoch called the Anthropocene, which is marked by human intervention in planetary systems, and what that would mean in how we think about the planet and maybe how we manage those systems of the Earth. Our guest is Earl Ellis, an associate professor of geography and environmental systems at the University of Maryland in Baltimore County. And we'll go next to Sharon in Baraboo. Hi, Sharon.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a couple of, I agree with your caller. I think this is a very interesting program, but I have a comment primarily about our understanding or lack of understanding of actually how the planet works to begin with. Given our recent natural disasters, everything from Hurricane Katrina to earthquakes in Japan, how, you know, we seem to not have any respect for the existing processes, you know, of geology and climate, and we build in places maybe that we shouldn't build in, or we just seem to be separated from the natural world. We don't seem to appreciate that there are bigger and higher, you know, sorry, that's my GPS unit, we're part of a system. We're not actually above it. We're not actually something that we can control it. And until we kind of accept that place, I wouldn't necessarily even say role, but our place in and among kind of what, you know, how the planet works and understand better how the planet works. I guess my question is, too, is I guess this concept of the Gaia, you know, the planet is one functioning system, is a pretty powerful one. I can't imagine how how your guests can actually kind of, you know, not accept that there are things over and above humans, basically. If we were to look 10,000 years from now, I don't think you know, the planet will still be here. We may not be here, but the planet will still definitely be here. And I'll take the call off the air.
Okay, thank you very much, Sharon. And Earl?
Yeah, well, there's two things there. As a scientist, and not a geologist, but as a scientist and familiar with geologists, don't blame the geologists for people building in earthquake zones. I mean, I think we scientists are well aware that the forces of nature that are out there are quite powerful, and that we don't understand them as well as we'd like to. I mean, we still can't really predict earthquakes hardly at all. So there's a lot of things we don't know. And in fact, what we don't know is certainly much greater than what we do in terms of actually, you know, the ability to really predict everything about the way this planet functions. We're just not there yet, which does argue for a huge amount of caution. But on the other hand, I think when you think about, first of all, and I didn't respond earlier to the definition of the Gaia concept, but the fundamental idea of the Gaia concept is that organisms can interact with their environment in such a way as to actually make their climate more suitable for themselves and sustain that sort of more suitable environment. That's the basic idea behind the Gaia concept, so that, in other words, the life on Earth actually helps maintain the conditions for life on Earth. And I think the very simple role of humans added into this equation is that we've now become, in a sense, the brains of Gaia. We are now a part of the system that is so powerful that we influence all the other parts of the system in our own way, and that arguably we have done exactly what other organisms have done to create an environment better for ourselves. And if you look at our numbers and the way they've grown, if you look at our standard of living, I think you have to argue that the planet is much better for us than it's ever been. It's now possible for us to live in such great numbers and such great wealth, and that's a result of the way we've re-engineered the planet. It produces more food than it could ever produce before. And think about it this way. If we were hunter-gatherers still, if we hadn't changed the way that the environment works, because, you know, agriculture is a re-engineering of the environment, if we had stayed hunter-gatherers, we could probably only support at most a few million people on Earth, maybe 10 million or so. So already we've engineered the planet to support ourselves better. Whether we like what we see when we do that, that's where, again, you're holding up the mirror. Do you think the planet's better when it's got, you know, 12% of its area covered with crops, or do you feel like it's better without people at all? I think that's a personal kind of feeling about it. But I think you can't argue with the numbers that we've, you know, continued to grow and we've continued to prosper and we've continued to engineer the planet to make that happen. And I have a hard time seeing how that really differs from the classic view of Gaia. But it's true, we don't really know what we're doing. And our influence is, you know, much like any kind of large force put into a small place. I mean, we have a big effect whether we want it to or whether we know how to guide it or not. And arguably, we don't know how to guide it. But as Stuart Brand said, you know, in the late 60s, you know, we are as God, so we better get good at it. It's about time we recognized our role is, you know, so huge that we better start doing it a good job of it, because we really haven't focused on doing better at that scale, I think. We've tried. I mean, you've got some real interest in doing that now at the global scale, but we've got a long way to go before we could say that we're even slightly going about it in a powerful way, intelligent way.
Yeah, I mean, we may have to get good at it, but I keep sort of thinking in the back of my mind about Jurassic Park and sort of the message there that it's hubris whenever humans try to get involved in tinkering with the planet and with biology, and that it's maybe a doomed enterprise. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, isn't that what we've already got? I mean, honestly.
Well, right, we do already have it, and I guess you're saying it's good and bad, but we do already have it, and we've kind of, you know, we could say we've made a mess of it, but I guess you're saying we've had some great successes for supporting humans on the planet, too.
Well, I just think looking at everything we've done in the last few thousands of years, the changes that we've undergone, the amazing amount of knowledge we've gained, and see nothing but damage and waste and disaster, seems to me such a short-sighted view. I mean, anyone coming from, or any, you know, alien coming from another planet and seeing what's gone on here, they'll see that we've done lots of mistaken things and that we're not always acting in our own self-interest, which seems, you know, why would we do that? But we do often act in ways that is not in our own self-interest. But in many ways, we've done some amazing things. And I don't think that, you know, the fact that we make mistakes makes us, you know, somehow a complete failure. I don't see that at all. I think, you know, it's been a mixed bag, and it's probably going to continue to be a mixed bag. We're never going to be perfect. But I don't see where we are right now as just an indicator of a giant disaster, but more as a giant experiment, and an experiment I hope can be guided better.
Well, thank you for that. That was an optimistic take. I mean, we interview so many people who are very pessimistic about the state of the planet, saying that it's already too late. And it's nice to hear optimism from someone who knows what they're doing in the field.
Well, where I'm speaking from is a good place, I think. And I'm in a village that the building right next to me is 600 years old. And the farmland in front of me has been farmed definitely a lot longer than this building has been here, and it still remains very productive land. There's beautiful forests on the hills here, and I see in no way a damaged, degraded place, yet this has sustained dense populations of people for thousands of years. So when I see that what we can do, and of course this is a place that is changing fast like the rest of China, but I don't see it as just this one long disaster. I think we are going through a very rapid transition. I don't think people really grasp the fact that industrialization is really still just getting going in a lot of ways. And urbanization is really just, you know, midway through. And the results of that are really changing the planet fast. I mean, the speed is really remarkable. You know, in a place like China, you know, someone asked me for travel tips. And I said, look, from someone who's been in China a bunch. And they said, well, I said, you know, come on, if you leave China for 2 years, it's like you're just a new visitor. And there's some truth to that. Things change so fast in every way, culturally too. People act different. They think different already than they used to. So that's a dynamic that is both bracing, you know, when you see things racing by and change happening so fast. On the other hand, it's kind of remarkable that we're able to do that, because we do seem to be able to do that. We can go through changes like that.
Let's take another phone call now. Josie joins us from Sheboygan. Hi, Josie.
Hi, Veronica. Yes, I've been intently listening, and I disagree with a lot of things that your guest is saying. The planet is being ruled by the corporations for years and years now. I see degradation everywhere. The amount of people, this planet cannot sustain the amount of people that are coming and that are already here. And we may be successful so far, but at the exploitation of every other living thing. And I think that is a crime. I'm 66 years old, and I just don't see things getting better. I'd rather look at a tree than a building across the street, you know? I think it's awful. And like that, I agree with a lot of other callers that called in, like that man that said all those dead zones, you know, and people like BP and all that, incinerating animals, you know, with trying to burn the oil to hide it. And it's just, they go into every other country. It took 26 years to sue a chemical company where they killed I don't know how many people. And they got a minuscule amount of money compared to what the company is worth. I'm just totally, I don't know what planet he lives on, you know, and I don't think we've done such great things. The things that I could say that are good is to help people maybe in the health department and things like that, you know, but we still don't do that right either. I don't know. I see so much suffering with people and animals and the earth, and it's just, it's unbelievable and sad.
Well, Josie, thank you for your call and your point of view. And Earl, I want you to respond to that. We've got about a little less than a minute for your response.
Okay. I guess the simplest thing I would say, if you want to see a tree across from your house, you're going to have to find a way to plant that tree. It's not going to happen because the tree's going to grow up and take back over the land that we're already managing with buildings and all that, you're going to have to go out and plant that tree. If we want a planet with trees on it, it's going to be up to us to plant them and sustain them, because it's not going to be nature out there taking care of itself. We're going to have to take care of nature. And I think that we can, and we are doing better. I really don't believe that things are just getting worse. Things do get worse in some places and are getting worse in some places, but they're also getting better in a lot of places. And I think the overall picture is not clearly on one side or the other, and that we have the ability to do this better. And I hope that that's where we're going to be going with the Anthropocene, that as we become aware of our really profound role in things, that we will make the effort to do things better.
And let's leave it there. Earl Ellis, thank you so much. It's been really an interesting talk this morning. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Earl Ellis, Associate Professor at the University of Maryland in Baltimore County. Thank you to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning for production. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.